Chapter 18. She missed it by a fraction. She nearly cut it, but not quite. She went in just right, Case thought. The right attitude. It was something he could sense, something he could have seen in the posture of another cowboy leaning into a deck, fingers flying across the board. She had it, the thing, the moves. And she'd pulled it all together for her entrance. Pulled it together around the pain in her leg and marched down Three Jane's stairs like she owned the place, elbow of her gun arm at her hip, forearm up, wrist relaxed, swaying the muzzle of the Fletcher with the studied nonchalance of a Regency duelist. It was a performance. It was like the culmination of a lifetime's observation of martial arts tapes, cheap ones, the kind Case had grown up on. For a few seconds he knew she was every badass hero, Sony Mao in the old Shaw videos, Mickey Chiba, the whole lineage back to Lee and Eastwood. She was walking it the way she talked it. Lady Three Jane Marie France Tessier Ashpool had carved herself a low country flush with the inner surface of Straylight's Hall, chopping away the maze of walls that was her legacy. She lived in a single room so broad and deep that its far reaches were lost to an inverse horizon, the floor hidden by the curvature of the spindle. The ceiling was low and irregular, done in the same imitation stone that walled the corridor. Here and there, across the floor, were jagged sections of wall, waist-high reminders of the labyrinth. There was a rectangular turquoise pool centered 10 meters from the foot of the stairway, its underwater floods the apartment's only source of light. Or it seemed that way to Case, as Molly took her final step. The pool threw shifting blobs of light across the ceiling above it. They were waiting by the pool. He'd known that her reflexes were souped up, jazzed by the neurosurgeons for combat, but he hadn't experienced them on the SimStim link. The effect was like tape run at half speed, a slow, deliberate dance choreographed to the killer instinct and years of training. She seemed to take the three of them in at a glance, the boy poised on the pool's high board, the girl grinning over her wine glass, and the corpse of Ashpool, his left socket gaping black and corrupt above his welcoming smile. He wore his maroon robe. His teeth were very white. The boy dove, slender, brown, his form perfect. The grenade left her hand before his hands could cut the water. Case knew the thing for what it was as it broke the surface, a core of high explosive wrapped with 10 meters of fine, brittle steel wire. Her Fletcher whined as she sent a storm of explosive darts into Ashpool's face and chest, and he was gone, smoke curling from the pocked back of the empty white-enameled pool chair. The muzzle swung for Three Jane as the grenade detonated, a symmetrical wedding cake of water rising, breaking, falling back. But the mistake had been made. Hideo didn't even touch her then. Her leg collapsed. In Garvey, Case screamed.
"It took you long enough," Riviera said as he searched her pockets.
Her hands vanished at the wrists in a matte black sphere the size of a bowling ball.
"I saw a multiple assassination in Ankara," he said, his fingers plucking things from her jacket. "A grenade job, in a pool. It seemed a very weak explosion, but they all died instantly of hydrostatic shock."
Case felt her move her fingers experimentally. The material of the ball seemed to offer no more resistance than temper foam. The pain in her leg was excruciating, impossible. A red moire shifted in her vision. "I wouldn't move them if I were you." The interior of the ball seemed to tighten slightly. "It's a sex toy Jane bought in Berlin. Wiggle them long enough, and it crushes them to a pulp. Variant of the material they make this flooring from. Something to do with the molecules, I suppose. Are you in pain?"
She groaned. "You seem to have injured your leg."
His fingers found the flat packet of drugs in the left back pocket of her jeans.
"Well, my last taste from Ali, and just in time."
The shifting mesh of blood began to whirl.
"Hideo," said another voice, a woman's. "She's losing consciousness. Give her something. For that, and for the pain. She's very striking, don't you think, Peter? These glasses, are they a fashion where she comes from?"
Cool hands, unhurried with a surgeon's certainty, the sting of a needle.
"I wouldn't know," Riviera was saying. "I've never seen her native habitat. They came and took me from Turkey."
"The sprawl, yes. We have interests there.
and once we sent Hideo. My fault, really. I'd let someone in, a burglar. He took the family terminal. She laughed. I made it easy for him, to annoy the others. He was a pretty boy, my burglar. Is she waking, Hideo? Shouldn't she have more?
More, and she would die, said a third voice.
The blood mesh slid into black. The music returned, horns and piano, dance music.
Case! Jack out!
After images of the flashed words danced across Malcolm's eyes and creased forehead as Case removed the trodes.
You scream, man, while ago.
Molly, he said, his throat dry, got hurt. He took a white plastic squeeze bottle from the edge of the G-web and sucked out a mouthful of flat water.
I don't like how any of this shit is going.
The little cray monitor lit, the fin against a background of twisted, impacted junk.
Neither do I. We got a problem.
Malcolm pulled himself up over Case's head, twisted and peered over his shoulder.
Now who is that, Mon Case?
That's just a picture, Malcolm, Case said wearily. Guy I know in the sprawl. It's Wintermute talking. Picture's supposed to make us feel at home.
Bullshit, the Finn said. Like I told Molly, these aren't masks. I need 'em to talk to you, 'cause I don't have what you'd think of as a personality much. But all that's just pissing in the wind, Case, 'cause, like I just said, we got a problem.
So express thyself, mute, Malcolm said.
Molly's legs falling off for starts. Can't walk. How it was supposed to go down, she'd walk in, get Peter out of the way, talk the magic word out of 3-Jane, get up to the head and say it. Now she's blown it. So I want you two to go in after her.
Case stared at the face on the screen.
Us? So who else?
Errol, Case said. The guy on Babylon Rocker, Malcolm's pal.
No, gotta be you. Gotta be somebody who understands Molly, who understands Riviera. Malcolm for muscle.
You maybe forget that I'm in the middle of a little run here, remember? What you hauled my ass out here for.
Case, listen up. Time's tight, very tight. Listen. The real link between your deck and Straylight is a sideband broadcast over Garvey's navigation system. You'll take Garvey into a very private dock, I'll show you. The Chinese virus has completely penetrated the fabric of the Hosaka. There's nothing in the Hosaka but virus now. When you dock, the virus will be interfaced with the Straylight custodial system and will cut the sideband. You'll take your deck, the flatline, and Malcolm. You'll find 3-Jane, get the word out of her, kill Riviera, get the key from Molly. You can keep track of the program by jacking your deck into the Straylight system. I'll handle it for you. There's a standard jack in the back of the head behind a panel with 5 zircons.
Kill Riviera?
Kill him.
Case blinked at the representation of the fin. He felt Malcolm put his hand on his shoulder.
Hey, you forget something. He felt the rage rising and a kind of glee. You fucked up. You blew the controls on the grapples when you blew Armitage. Honeywas got us good and tight. Armitage fried the other Hosaka and the mainframes went with the bridge, right?
The fin nodded.
So we're stuck out here, and that means you're fucked, man.
He wanted to laugh, but it caught in his throat.
Case, man, Malcolm said softly. Garvey a tug.
That's right, said the Finn, and smiled. You having fun in the big world outside? The construct asked when Case jacked back in.
Figured that was Wintermute requesting the pleasure.
Yeah, you bet. Quang okay?
Bang on. Killer virus.
Okay, got some snags, but we're working on it.
You want to tell me, maybe?
Don't have time.
Well, boy, never mind me. I'm just dead anyway.
Fuck off, Case said, and flipped, cutting off the torn fingernail edge of the flatline's laughter.
She dreamed of a state involving very little in the way of individual consciousness, 3-Jane was saying. She cupped a large cameo in her hand, extending it toward Molly. The carved profile was very much like her own.
Animal bliss. I think she viewed the evolution of the forebrain as a sort of sidestep.
She withdrew the brooch and studied it, tilting it to catch the light at different angles.
Only in certain heightened modes would an individual, a clan member, suffer the more painful aspects of self-awareness.
Molly nodded. Case remembered the injection. What had they given her? The pain was still there, but it came through as a tight focus of scrambled impressions. Neon worms writhing in her thigh, the touch of burlap, smell of frying krill. His mind recoiled from it. If he avoided focusing on it, the impressions overlapped, became a sensory equivalent of white noise. If it could do that to her nervous system, what would her frame of mind be? Her vision was abnormally clear and bright, even sharper than usual. Things seemed to vibrate, each person or object tuned to a minutely different frequency. Her hands, still locked in the black ball, were on her lap. She sat in one of the pool chairs, her broken leg propped straight in front of her on a camelskin hassock. 3Jane sat opposite, on another hassock, huddled in an oversized jalaba of unbleached wool. She was very young. "Where'd he go?" Molly asked. "To take his shot?" 3Jane shrugged beneath the folds of the pale, heavy robe and tossed a strand of dark hair away from her eyes. "He told me when to let you in," she said. "He wouldn't tell me why. Everything has to be a mystery. Would you have hurt us?" Case felt Molly hesitate. "I would have killed him. I'd have tried to kill the ninja. Then I was supposed to talk with you." "Why?" 3Jane asked, tucking the cameo back into one of the jalaba's inner pockets. "And why? And what about?" Molly seemed to be studying the high, delicate bones, the wide mouth, the narrow hawk nose. 3Jane's eyes were dark, curiously opaque. "Because I hate him," she said at last. "And the why of that's just the way I'm wired, what he is and what I am." "And the show," 3Jane said. "I saw the show." Molly nodded. "But Hideo?" "Because they're the best. Because one of them killed a partner of mine once." 3Jane became very grave. She raised her eyebrows. "Because I had to see," Molly said. "And then we would have talked, you and I, like this?" Her dark hair was very straight, center parted, drawn back into a knot of dull sterling. "Shall we talk now?" "Take this off," Molly said, raising her captive hands. "You killed my father," 3Jane said, no change whatever in her tone. "I was watching on the monitors. My mother's eyes," he called them. "He killed the puppet. It looked like you." "He was fond of broad gestures," she said, and then Riviera was beside her, radiant with drugs, in the seersucker convict outfit he'd worn in the roof garden of their hotel. "Getting acquainted? She's an interesting girl, isn't she? I thought so when I first saw her." He stepped past 3Jane. "It isn't going to work, you know." "Isn't it, Peter?" Molly managed to grin. "Wintermute won't be the first to have made the same mistake, underestimating me." He crossed the tiled pool border to a white enamel table and splashed mineral water into a heavy crystal highball glass. "He talked with me, Molly. I suppose he talked to all of us. You and Case, whatever there is of Armitage to talk to. He can't really understand us, you know. He has his profiles, but those are only statistics. You may be the statistical animal, darling, and Case is nothing but I possess a quality unquantifiable by its very nature." He drank. "And what exactly is that, Peter?" Molly asked, her voice flat. Riviera beamed. "Perversity." He walked back to the two women, swirling the water that remained in the dense, deeply carved cylinder of rock crystal, as though he enjoyed the weight of the thing. "An enjoyment of the gratuitous act. And I have made a decision, Molly, a wholly gratuitous decision." She waited, looking up at him. "Oh, Peter," 3Jane said, with the sort of gentle exasperation ordinarily reserved for children. "No word for you, Molly. He told me about that, you see. 3Jane knows the code, of course, but you won't have it. Neither will Wintermute. My Jane's an ambitious girl, in her perverse way." He smiled again. "She has designs on the family empire and a pair of insane artificial intelligences, kinky as the concept may be, would only get in our way. So, comes her Riviera to help her out, you see. And Peter says, sit tight. Play Daddy's favorite swing records and let Peter call you up a band to match, a floor of dancers, a wake for dead King Ashpool." He drank off the last of the mineral water. "No, you wouldn't do, Daddy, you would not do, now that Peter's come home." And then, his face pink with the pleasure of cocaine and meperidine, he swung the glass hard into her left lens implant, smashing vision into blood and light. Malcolm was prone against the cabin ceiling when Case removed the trodes. A nylon sling around his waist was fastened to the panels on either side with shock cords and gray rubber suction pads. He had his shirt off and was working on a central panel with a clumsy-looking zero-G wrench, the thing's fat counter-springs twanging as he removed another hex head. Marcus Garvey was groaning and ticking with G-stress. "The mute take an ionide doc," the Zionite said, popping the hex head into a mesh pouch at his waist. "Malcolm pilot the landin'. Meantime, need we tool for the job?" "You keep tools back there?" Case craned his neck and watched cords of muscle bunching in the brown back. "This one," Malcolm said, sliding a long bundle wrapped in black poly from the space behind the panel. He replaced the panel, along with a single hex head to hold it in place. The black package had drifted aft before he'd finished. He thumbed open the vacuum valves on the work belt's gray pads and freed himself, retrieving the thing he'd removed. He kicked back, gliding over his instruments. A green docking diagram pulsed on his central screen and snagged the frame of Case's G-web. He pulled himself down and picked at the tape of his package with a thick, chipped thumbnail. "Some men in China say the truth comes out this," he said, unwrapping an ancient oil-slick Remington automatic shotgun, its barrel chopped off a few millimeters in front of the battered forestock. The shoulder stock had been removed entirely, replaced with a wooden pistol grip wound with dull black tape. He smelled of sweat and ganja. "That the only one you got?" "Sure, man," he said, wiping oil from the black barrel with a red cloth, the black poly wrapping bunched around the pistol grip in his other hand. "I and I the Rastafarian Navy, believe it." Case pulled the trodes down across his forehead. He'd never bothered to put the Texas catheter back on. At least he could take a real piss in the Villa Straylight, even if it was his last. He jacked in. "Hey," the construct said, "old Peter's totally apeshit, huh?" They seemed to be part of the Tessier Ashpool ice now. The emerald arches had widened, grown together, become a solid mass. Green predominated in the planes of the Chinese program that surrounded them. "Getting close, Dixie?" "Real close. Need you soon." "Listen, Dix. Wintermute says Quang's set itself up solid in our Hosaka. I'm going to have to jack you and my deck out of the circuit, haul you into Straylight, and plug you back in, into the custodial program there, Wintermute says. Says the Quang virus will be all through there. Then we run from inside through the Straylight net." "Wonderful," the flatline said. "I never did like to do anything simple when I could do it ass backwards." Case flipped. Into her darkness, a churning synesthesia where her pain was the taste of old iron, scent of melon, wings of a moth brushing her cheek. She was unconscious, and he was barred from her dreams. When the optic chip flared, the alphanumerics were haloed, each one ringed with a faint pink aura. 7:29:40. "I'm very unhappy with this, Peter." Three Jane's voice seemed to arrive from a hollow distance. Molly could hear, he realized, then corrected himself. The SimStim unit was intact and still in place. He could feel it digging against her ribs. Her ears registered the vibrations of the girl's voice. Riviera said something brief and indistinct. "But I don't," she said, "and it isn't fun. Hideo will bring a medical unit down from intensive care, but this needs a surgeon." There was a silence. Very distinctly, Case heard the water lap against the side of the pool. "What was that you were telling her when I came back?" Riviera was very close now. "About my mother. She asked me to. I think she was in shock, aside from Hideo's injection. Why did you do that to her?" "I wanted to see if they would break." "One did. When she comes around, if she comes around, we'll see what color her eyes are. She's extremely dangerous. Too dangerous. If I hadn't been here to distract her, to throw up Ashpool to distract her, and my own Hideo to draw her little bomb, where would you be? In her power?" "No," Three Jane said. "There was Hideo. I don't think you quite understand about Hideo. She does, evidently." "Like a drink?" "Wine, the white." Case jacked out. Malcolm was hunched over Garvey's controls, tapping out commands for a docking sequence. The module's central screen displayed a fixed red square that represented the Straylight dock. Garvey was a larger square, green, that shrank slowly, wavering from side to side with Malcolm's commands. To the left, a smaller screen displayed a skeletal graphic of Garvey and Haniwa as they approached the curvature of the spindle.
"We got an hour, man," Case said, pulling the ribbon of fiber optics from the Hosaka. His deck's backup batteries were good for 90 minutes, but the flatline's construct would be an additional drain.
He worked quickly, mechanically, fastening the construct to the bottom of the Ono Sendai with micropore tape. Malcolm's work belt drifted past. He snagged it, unclipped the two lengths of shock cord, with their gray rectangular suction pads, and hooked the jaws of one clip through the other. He held the pads against the sides of his deck and worked the thumb lever that created suction. With the deck, construct, and improvised shoulder strap suspended in front of him, he struggled into his leather jacket, checking the contents of his pockets. The passport Armitage had given him, the bank chip in the same name, the credit chip he'd been issued when he'd entered Freeside, 2 derms of beta-phenethylamine he'd bought from Bruce, a roll of new yen, half a pack of Yeheyuans, and a shuriken. He tossed the Freeside chip over his shoulders, heard it click off the Russian scrubber. He was about to do the same with the steel star, but the rebounding credit chip clipped the back of his skull, spun off, struck the ceiling, and tumbled past Malcolm's left shoulder. The Zionite interrupted his piloting to glare back at him. Case looked at the shuriken, then tucked it into his jacket pocket, hearing the lining tear.
"You missin' the mute, man," Malcolm said. "Mute say he be messin' the security for Garvey. Garvey dockin' as 'nother boat, boat they spectin' out of Babylon. Mute broadcastin' codes for us."
"We gonna wear the suits?"
"Too heavy," Malcolm shrugged. "Stay in web till I tell you."
He tapped a final sequence into the module and grabbed the worn pink handholds on either side of the navigation board. Case saw the green square shrink a final few millimeters to overlap the red square. On the smaller screen, Haniwa lowered her bow to miss the curve of the spindle and was snared. Garvey was still slung beneath her like a captive grub. The tug rang, shuddered. 2 stylized arms sprang out to grip the slender wasp shape. Straylight extruded a tentative yellow rectangle that curved, groping past Haniwa for Garvey. There was a scraping sound from the bow beyond the trembling fronds of caulk.
"Man," Malcolm said, "mind we got gravity."
12 small objects struck the floor of the cabin simultaneously, as though drawn there by a magnet. Case gasped as his internal organs were pulled into a different configuration. The deck and construct had fallen painfully to his lap. They were attached to the spindle now, rotating with it. Malcolm spread his arms, flexed tension from his shoulders, and removed his purple dread bag, shaking out his locks.
"Come now, man, if you say time be most precious."